This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
A few weeks ago, here on the Saturday morning show, we talked to John Slayton, who is the chairman of the Illinois Fairgrounds Foundation. Well, we're about a month away from the Illinois State Fair, so it's time to do an update on how we can all play a role in improving the structure of buildings on the Illinois State Fairgrounds. John, good morning.
Good morning, Orion. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. And it's hard to realize that we're only a month away from State Fair time.
I would agree with you. It's been a fast summer.
Well, let's talk about where we are on the foundation, because some people may not have been with us back in June when we talked about it. So fill me in again on the purpose and the makeup of the foundation for the State Fair.
Well, Governor Rauner established the foundation last year during the State Fair on Ag Day and did so by proclamation. And the purpose of the foundation is to provide renovation and repairs to the 170 buildings on the Illinois State Fairgrounds and also the DuQuoin Fairgrounds. So the Capital Development Board has estimated the necessary repairs on both fairgrounds to be approximately $185 million, which is a big step to take, and it will take a number of years. We realize that, but we're fresh out of the chute and still haven't received 501c3 approval from the IRS, but expect that to land within the next month or so. So we're gearing up. We've had a fundraiser in early June this summer and brought in about 15 grand from that thing. But I think our goal, Orion, is probably to raise $3 to $5 million a year. We're having conversations now with Illinois corporations about naming rights on some of the buildings, and I think once the first one's going to happen, then I think others will follow shortly thereafter.
Many fairgrounds have adopted that practice, have they not, of selling off naming rights for various buildings?
I think for sure Minnesota, Iowa, and Oklahoma have done it. I'm not sure about Indiana or Wisconsin.
But it is a way to raise funds in addition to individual investments, as I like to call them. I don't donate to anything, but I do invest. And so you've got room for corporate and you've got room for individual investors, do you not?
Absolutely. And they can go to our website at IllinoisFairgroundsFoundation.com, and there are links on that website to make donations or to purchase benches with umbrellas, and we'll put your name on those and place them around the fairgrounds. Or you can look at the link on the website for the commemorative brick program that we're starting up here during the State Fair. And I think that commemorative brick program is going to grow pretty quickly as people pick up on it. And we'll put the bricks, I think, maybe locate them around the grandstand or around the Coliseum, and we'll end up looking like Busch Stadium in St. Louis. And it's been a very, very successful program down there, so our hope is to kind of mimic it.
Any idea on the cost of the investment for me in a brick?
Cost of a brick, there's an 8x8 for $250, and then a regular size brick's $100, and they would be engraved in whatever manner you would choose to do so.
And how about the bench?
Benches are $2,500. They will provide some comfort for fairgoers along Grandstand Avenue and in the street coming up from the main gate on the fairgrounds. So it'll provide some shaded areas for people just to stop and maybe rest as they're going through the fairgrounds.
Well, a nice way to provide comfort, but with the brick, a nice way to provide a memorial for family members who always went to the fair and are no longer with us. So it sounds like a lot of good opportunities to invest in the fairgrounds.
It is, and we even have some families that want to do that in naming rights for, like, some of the livestock barns. I think Barn 25D, we have a family who's interested in naming it after a grandfather who has passed on, and it's now a horse barn, but when he was showing cattle at the Illinois State Fair, it was a Hereford barn. So they want to honor him with naming rights on that building, so we're happy to continue that conversation with them.
I was going to say, a lot of opportunities. Before I leave you this morning, you always get involved in finding buyers to buy the champion livestock of the 4-H and FFA members. I know that's got to be a challenge every year, John, but it's open to anybody who wants to invest in the future of kids, isn't it?
That's true, and that's why I'm involved in it, Orion, and I think why you're involved in it is to benefit the agricultural youth of the state of Illinois.
And how do they get in touch with you on that one if they want to become involved as a bidder in commodities or in livestock?
Well, I work for U.S. Bank in Springfield, and my office number is 217-753-7564, or they can contact the Illinois State Fair at 217-782-0770, and they will put them in touch with me via that route.
And over the years, the livestock auction, there you have attracted corporations and companies from the state, haven't you?
Oh, we've had a number of them, Orion, from Monsanto and Brandt and AT&T and Cargill and Pioneer and CME Group and Allen's Steakhouse out of Chicago and any number of them, and they've all been very supportive of the program and the benefits it provides to agricultural youth.
Well, I am looking forward to being there on August 15th. That's the Salute to Agriculture Day and the auction day. And I think this will make my 52nd or 53rd Illinois State Fair. And it's always been fun to work the auction particularly and see the see the looks on the faces of the kids who suddenly are hearing dollar amounts they couldn't even begin to imagine.
Yeah, and that's changing a little bit this year where they've changed
right.
How much the kid's going to get. But I do have a goat that's available, and I was saving it for you, Orion.
Okay, let me take a look at that. I'll talk to Gloria and see if we can maybe replace our lawn cutting service with a goat on the far, on the front yard here in Huntley, Illinois. Always a pleasure, John, and we'll look forward to seeing you on Agriculture Day at the Illinois State Fair.
Thank you, Orion. Best wishes.
John Slayton, who is chairman of the Illinois Fairgrounds Foundation, joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show. It's 23 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and after spending over a half century in this broadcast business, one of these days I'll learn how to do it and get my microphone turned on the right way to start the show, as I did not do this morning. But anyway, if there is an outdoor, antique, old tractor farm show anywhere in the country, you can bet that Max Armstrong is going to be there. So let's say good morning to Max.
Orion, good morning from Champaign County, Illinois, as I'm joining you here from the I&I grounds in the town of Penfield. It's northeast of Champaign. It's a little bit east of Rantoul, Illinois, home of one of the finest antique farm equipment shows in the country, the Historic Farm Day Show, the I&I Show. As you and I have talked about it so many times over the years, when people come out to this show, which started on Thursday and then concludes tomorrow here on the show grounds, they hear the voice of Chris Carr, the PA announcer, who I should also point out has been many times the champion of the Illinois State Fair Hog Calling Contest. But that's a whole other story for another day. How have the first 2 days of the show been, Chris?
Oh, Max, just great. We've got a wonderful attendance. Crowd came from all over the United States, many states represented. Just having a ball with the Alice Chalmers. We featured Alice Chalmers this year in Advanced Rumley Tractors. And you know what? Cast Iron Seat Collectors Association have come from all over, and you wouldn't believe the display of cast iron seats that we've got here.
It is kind of impressive. It would leave an impression on you.
Yes, it would.
The display would, too, as a matter of fact. We really enjoyed visiting with folks here from actually surprising places in the United States. I met people from Virginia. I met people from Alabama. They've heard us talking about it, of course, on our television show this week in agribusiness, but it's just it's a nice, relaxed atmosphere here.
Yes, it is, and we've got about 120 acres. Nice showgrounds are nice, and the people just like to come here, and we've got a balance. We kind of got something for everybody in the family. Grandpas are showing the kids, and that's what we're all about, heritage in the old equipment that we have here.
As we're standing here at this moment, speaking of heritage, I'm looking over there at that big Case 1200 tractor, and the fellow who owned that tractor, Tom Zachary from Ottawa, Illinois, passed away just this spring. Throughout the years, it has always been a family event. His grandson Tyler and his granddaughter Kelly work in downtown Chicago, but they've always worked it out to be here at this show with their grandparents, and it's just the neat kind of a family event, as you point out. People just plan on it every year.
Memorializing him, yes. It's just a family thing, and like I said, each year that we change the feature tractor here at Penfield, the Historic Farming Days, it brings a different group of people.
Yeah. There's an Alice Chalmers. Well, it's a modified Alice Chalmers. The gentleman has a farm west of West Lafayette, Indiana, but his son flies in from Scottsdale, Arizona every year to be with him and to bring Alice Chalmers tractors.
Coming in here to the show, yes. Again, a family thing, and the camaraderie. We've just got so many friends. This is the 21st year, I think, and to make these friends, and I get to see these people once a year when I announce, and they come. My goodness, I've met a lot of people today from Kentucky, Ohio, Iowa, and of course, around Illinois. We're going to do that.
You know, the neat thing, too, is this is a nice warm-up for the big show that'll be taking place the end of August at the old Chanute Air Force Base. Many of the same people are involved, including yourself.
We're really looking forward, kind of getting ready for that show, already getting ready for it, and it's coming quick. Our crops look nice at Rantoul. We got them planted early, the corn and the beans. Luckily, we've been getting a good enough rain there, so we're looking forward that last week, 24th through the 27th of August, to crank up there for the Rantoul Half Century of Progress show.
One thing that'll be a little bit different at that show is we're going to pay tribute to the volunteer firefighters throughout the Midwest, and we're asking some of the fire departments to bring in old trucks that they've had for many years. Maybe they keep them to parade them. Maybe they've kept them in the back of the fire barn as they've upgraded their equipment over the years, but we're having a meeting here, in fact, at the Eye and Eye show about that display. So we're going to welcome fire departments maybe to come in for a day, come in for 2 days to display those old trucks. We have several lined up that'll be bringing them in. And really, again, it's to pay tribute to the farmers and the teachers and the preachers and the grain elevator operators, all of these folks who were the first responders through the decades that they've been there. Many of them have done it for a lifetime.
This is my 40th year as being a fireman at Seymour, a volunteer fireman. Yes.
Well, you know what that's like. And, you know, in many ways, I think it's more challenging than the paid folks of the fire service in some of the big cities.
Yes.
There are some things that are even a little more challenging, I think, from a personal standpoint, because you know everybody.
You know everybody, yes.
As you roll up at a farmstead, it's maybe a family member or someone you grew up
with. Pretty tough. Yes, it is. At times it is. But then again, we want the community to know that we're there to help them.
Well,
what it's all about.
The other thing that strikes me, too, and I've talked about this on the air at different times, volunteers in the rural areas, those are the hands that reach in the car when you get in trouble on the interstate. You may be from Chicago, you may be from Milwaukee. If something happens to you 20 miles outside of Champaign, it's a volunteer. And you folks are very well trained these days.
That's why they call us first responders, I guess, because we are the first ones there and try to, you know, assess everything and get going get safety back in place.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you at Rantoul in a few weeks, but we encourage folks to come here to the Eye and Eye Show. We have a great show lined up for today, and things will wrap up tomorrow here, as is always the case on Sunday. There's a lot of equipment to see and a lot of things to see, too.
Thanks an awful lot. We sure appreciate it.
Chris Carr, good to talk to you.
Great. See you then at Rantoul.
All right, Orion, that's our report here from the Eye and Eye Show grounds, Penfield, Illinois, U.S. 136. East of Rantoul, 120 miles or so south of Chicago.
All right, Max, thank you for checking in this morning, and I know you've got a couple more very busy days at Penfield. And folks, if you're looking for something to do in, that might include a drive in the country, you may want to head for Penfield and look at agricultural history in how we used to do it, and how we're doing it a lot faster and maybe a lot better than we did back in those days. Thank you very much, Roger. And we're at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock now. We do appreciate your joining us every Saturday morning as we spend some time talking about the most basic and the most needed industry in the world, producing food for a growing population. And that's what the farmers of America do better than anybody else on the planet. So we're going to be talking markets because of the, again, weather markets that we've had, particularly in the spring wheat area. Who would have thought we'd see wheat back above $5 a bushel this quickly, but that's what weather can do. On the other hand, who would have thought that we could see wheat prices fall below that $5 level this quickly? But as I've been saying for decades, the weather market will very often go down faster than it went up. But Max and his guest, Mark Feit of the International Agribusiness Group, headquartered in Michigan, will be joining us shortly to talk about that. But right now, it's time for Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, still looking for answers to some questions that I posed last month. But, you know, I'm truly delighted to be on the air for Wink Products Company, one of the Midwest success stories that make the Midwest rural community so great. Wink is a family-owned corporation located in rural Eldora, Iowa. And that company has manufactured specialty cleaning products for over 70 years. Today, Wink is a nationally recognized brand because Wink products work. Wink manufactures professional strength household cleaners and drain openers for you. And you can learn about all of the family of Wink products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Well, you may recall that last month I posed some questions on Samuelson Says. I asked for your help in providing answers. I didn't get any answers. I was criticized because I talked politics. I was criticized because I supported some Democratic viewpoints. I was criticized because I supported some Republican viewpoints. But I did neither, and as I stated at the beginning of that, Samuelson Says, I really delivered no political comments. But that proved something I learned decades ago as a broadcaster. Most people hear what they want to hear, not what I actually said. For example, I still don't know what we do when the never-ending hearings and the Russian hacking situation are finished. Do we arrest President Putin and throw him in jail? Do we sue the Russian government for damages? Will it change the outcome of the election? I don't think it will do any of the above, and not one email provided me with an opinion or an answer. Another emailer, though, said, "You owe members of Congress an apology." And there I plead guilty, because I stated that members of the House and Senate did not participate in the Social Security program and did not participate in the health care program that they legislate for us. Well, I was half right, because I was reminded that since 1985, members of Congress do participate in the Social Security program, like the majority of us, but members of Congress have their own health care program I think, better than ours, and they do not participate in the Affordable Health Care Act. So to the members of Congress, I apologize for that lack of knowledge. Now, on a totally different topic that I will be discussing in the future, Samuelson says, this past week something happened in Washington that could allow horse slaughter to resume at USDA-approved plants in the United States. Apparently, the ban on horse slaughter did not accomplish what some members of Congress thought it would when they approved it 5 years ago. And now, a couple of them are changing their vote. All the reasons why many of us did not approve that ban have come true. And we'll have more on this in the future. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. Coming up, Max Armstrong talks markets when we continue on the Saturday Morning Show.
Joining us this weekend, Mark Feit from the International Agribusiness Group. And I was looking over crop conditions, and I noted the eastern Corn Belt states, Indiana and Ohio, they're about 50% good to excellent on corn and beans. You were out on a crop tour earlier in the season looking at some of those fields. They looked pretty grim at the time. I remember seeing some of your comments, especially the northeast part of Indiana. Do you think that crop has improved some in the eastern Corn Belt as we've come along?
No, it really hasn't. I actually, on my way over to Naperville it's for the meeting, traveled that same area again the last 2 days, and it has not improved. If anything, it's probably gotten worse. That crop's in real trouble, and I don't see it that is going to improve in much of Indiana and even parts of southern Illinois.
So is 50% good to excellent being charitable for that crop? Is that a little better than you think it might be?
It may be, but 50% is already a pretty poor rating. So it's probably fair, and I think yields are going to be challenged to beat 2015 numbers.
That percentage that isn't good to excellent, as I recall, it was heavily fair. I mean, it wasn't really poor or very poor to a large percentage. Are we just splitting hairs here, I guess, a little bit?
Probably splitting hairs, but there aren't that many fields that are in real poor condition. It's just a lot of very average to medium quality crops is what I would call it. Beans are really struggling. They're small, waterlogged, yellow. They could be okay if we just treated them better the next 30 days.
It can make a big difference, can't it? Weather going forward. USDA came up with a pretty bearish assessment this week, or that was the perception anyway, as people looked across the numbers. Was there anything friendly in what the USDA did in its supply-demand report?
Well, I think there was, but the surprise, I guess I'm surprised that those were surprised by those numbers. We knew by their methodology the yields would be the same as they had in May and also in June, that they wouldn't change those yields and they would have a pretty big carryout with higher corn acres. Going forward, we think you have to adjust the U.S. crop pretty significantly. We're down, I think, 400 to 500 million bushels from where they are, and the Chinese crop is smaller. They've got better demand built into the soybean balance sheet, so I don't know if that can make you bullish, but it certainly makes you less bearish.
USDA has had a tendency to underestimate soybean demand, have they not, year after year?
Absolutely, and this year's no exception. They increased Chinese imports by 2 million tons yesterday, and then bumped next year's the new crop imports by another million tons. So it's been a persistent problem.
As far as corn is concerned, taking a look at what they did there, I heard some commentary. Some analyst was saying something to the effect that if you saw that yield trimmed by just 2 bushels to the acre, it would pretty much wipe out what USDA did in terms of the increased carryout for corn.
Yeah, and I think 2 bushels would be easy. Our guess is we're in the 165 to 167 bushel average on this crop. I think we're trading something 167 to 168, and that's a 1.8 to 1.9 carryout. So it gets a little more interesting. So I think the market's still got some we've still got some room to move. The yield is still open-ended. We don't know whether this ridge is coming back or not.
the Dakotas as far as that crop is concerned. Are you of the opinion USDA is fully accounting for what has happened there in that part of the world?
No, I don't think so. I think Dakotas and Nebraska as well, they're experiencing 100-degree heat during pollination here, and it's a real issue, and I don't think you really see that until harvest.
The Dakotas account for how much of the crop production? When you take a look at corn and beans, if you put them together, is it about 14-15%?
Yeah, it's that on a good year. So it's still a pretty small percent. But if you add Nebraska.
And Nebraska is a significant corn growing state. What, number three?
That's right. And maybe even a small piece of Iowa. So I think we've had some impact. We've trimmed the edges, both edges of this crop.
I did have a grower in northern Iowa tell me a few days ago that his crop wasn't looking that great. He was in the extreme northern part of the state along the Minnesota state line. And when you went over into Minnesota, it did look very good. But even there, an agronomist with a cooperative said to me, this is not going to be the 2015 crop, certainly the 2016, I should say, that they had in that part of the world, that it's an okay crop. It's not exceptional.
Yeah, and I think that's the hard part of this, of guessing the crop. These average crops are the hardest. When you have a big crop, you can just peg a record. When you have a 2012 crop, you can take a big chunk off and peg the yield pretty easy there. But the in-between, that's really hard.
What did the USDA say about global supplies? Did they confirm that there's still a lot out there because of what happened in South America this spring?
Yeah, I think they're off on the world corn carryout by 25 million tons. We're going to end the 16-17 crop with about 227 million tons world carryout. The USDA has new crop 17-18 at 200. We think they're about 25 million tons too high. I don't think they've trimmed the Chinese crop the way we think it has been due to weather this summer.
And which crop is that?
That's the Chinese corn crop. And we think that's about 10 million tons below where the gov is today. We think they're about 15 million tons too high on the U.S. crop. So now we're comparing 175 million ton carryout versus 225. It's a significant decline.
The wheat that's available to the world, there doesn't seem to be much of a shortage, but did USDA overestimate wheat supplies? I heard some comment about that maybe taking a look even at Australia and Canada and the Soviet Union, their numbers are a little high.
Well, I think they may be a little high on Russia, but overall I think the crop is – there's still plenty of common wheat. It's still the high-protein wheat that really doesn't – there's no substitute for that, so you can't connect that to soft red or much of the common wheat in the world. So supplies in wheat are still ample, and I think the wheat market's gotten itself a little overdone.
There's nothing to get too excited about given how much hard red winter wheat and soft red winter wheat we have.
That's correct. There's still enough of the hard winter. And the spring wheat is the only problem here. We're still in allocation mode. I'm not sure the market's done with spring wheat, but you can't take soft red and substitute and make high protein wheat with it. So you have to, if you need high protein, you have to have spring wheat.
Back on the corn and bean market for a moment. While there really wasn't anything in this report seemingly to get bulls terribly excited, there could still be some action of this market this summer, correct?
Yeah, if the ridge doesn't come back, we've probably seen the highs.
We hit the top then before this USDA report, unless this hot, dry air mass comes back in, you're saying.
I think that's right, and I don't think the report was the biggest part of this move. I think the loss in the market the last few days has been a change in the models. We've gone from models being very warm and dry to not so warm and much more rain in the second week of the forecast.
Thank you, sir, for your visit and your expertise. We sure do appreciate it. Mark Feit from International Agribusiness Group. Come back and see us.
Thanks, Max. I will.
We're at 8 minutes before 6 o'clock news time here on WGN Radio. I was delighted to hear the commercial for the Kane County Fair earlier on the program. That Kane County Fair will be underway July 20th through the 25th. And, of course, the Kane County Fair, the McHenry County Fair, the Lake County Indiana Fair, the Lake County Illinois County Fair, And on, we're into that season. But somebody emailed me and said, can you run over some of the dates of the outdoor farm shows that are on the schedule for this summer and fall? Well, on August 1st, we get underway in Redwood Falls, Minnesota with the annual Farm Fest. That's a three-day event, and it's a pretty big outdoor farm show in that part of the upper Midwest. Half Century of Progress, you heard Max talking about that earlier this morning. Rantoul, Illinois, August 24th through the 27th. Farm Progress Show, Decatur, Illinois, August 29th through 31. And then a couple of Threshermen's get-togethers. We have the Old Threshers Reunion in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. That will be August 31 to September 4. Central States Threshermen's Reunion in Pontiac, Illinois, Labor Day weekend, August 31 through September 4. Husker Harvest Days, Grand Island, Nebraska, September 12 through 14. The Ohio Farm Science Review in London, Ohio. And that comes up September 19 and 21. And I know there are some additional shows on the calendar, Sunbelt Expo, for example, in Moultrie, Georgia. And another Threshermen's Reunion, the Western Illinois Threshermen's Reunion. That comes up the first weekend of August, and I'll be there to attend that event on the Saturday of the weekend of the Western Illinois Threshermen's Reunion. That's just across the river from Keokuk, Iowa. We'll be flying Air Orion into Keokuk International Airport and driving across the river to put in an appearance at the Western Illinois Threshermen's Reunion. Okay, let's take a look at where we ended the week in the grain market activity yesterday, because corn and soybean futures actually jumped more than 1% on Friday after the big sell-off on Thursday. Bargain hunting and some steep losses the previous two sessions did bring some of that bargain hunting back. One analyst said, some people who went short are taking profits, and people are buying into the weather model changes. We are turning into another hot and dry weather pattern. That, according to Terry Riley, who is an analyst for Futures International. But midweek, golly, on Wednesday, prices dropped like a rock following the Department of Agriculture report showing we have more than enough grain and soybean supplies. And then those losses continued on Thursday amid weather outlooks for slightly reduced heat wave and heat levels. And so we ended the week with the July soybean contract up 14.5 cents yesterday at 9.85 and a quarter. New crop November beans still above $10 by a penny and a half, up 15 and a quarter cents a bushel for the day yesterday. July corn up 8 cents yesterday, ending at 3.65 and a quarter. New crop December corn up 7 at 3.89 and a half. September wheat ended the day yesterday up a penny, 5.10 and three quarters. Now turning to the cattle contracts at the Mercantile Exchange, ended higher yesterday, helped by short covering CME livestock market funds that follow the S&P Goldman Sachs Commodity Index sold or rolled August futures at the same time buying October on the fifth and final day of the Goldman roll process. August ended up 37 cents a hundredweight at $117.80. at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday. And traders reacted to some of the higher cash prices, surprising for this time of the year. So at the end of the week, the July lean hog contract at $92.60 a hundredweight after gaining just a dime yesterday. But the August lean hog contract up $2.67 for the day. The August live cattle contract up 60, or I should say the lean hog contract down $2.67 a day. Don't let me give you a heart attack on that one. But the August live cattle contract up 62 cents, 117.80. August feeder cattle contract up $1.77 at $154.27 a hundredweight. So that's where the markets ended the week yesterday. One other sad note here as we go into the county fair season. In Ohio, state officials have ordered the slaughter of nearly 300 hogs at a county fair in Ohio after at least two animals tested positive for swine flu. Clinton County Fair officials confirmed Thursday hogs had tested positive and would be slaughtered. A spokesman with the Ohio Department of Agriculture said the fair will disinfect the barn and its contents to stop any spread of the virus. Mark Bruce, department spokesman, says any equipment inside the barn will be released to owners after disinfection, a county fair in Ohio. And then earlier this week, we talked about the report from the Center for Disease Control, currently investigating 10 multi-state outbreaks of human salmonella infections linked to live poultry in backyard flocks. And an additional 418 sick people have been reported since the last update on June 1st, bringing the total number to 790. So on that note, we'll say thanks to Bob Ferguson for turning the switches at the right time, and thanks to you for joining us.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.